You already love the Mixing Music podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me today is special guest James Parrish.
Hello, James Parrish, formerly known as James Dean. How are you all doing?
I never asked you why the heck did just like, I know Dean was like your middle name.
So I did go with James Dean, and then I worked with a business coach a little bit and we talked about names and just in terms of like search engine stuff. There's already like two very famous James Deans, and so just James Parrish is more unique.
There you go.
Things like that. Cool. Yeah. And so I was like, yeah, actually, I kind of like that more. And so, yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Carry on the Parrish name.
There you go.
I feel like I've only ever met one other person who has like the same double R Parrish last name.
Huh. All right. Well, So just like a practical reason. Anyway, James has always been James Parrish or James to me, just James. Anyway,
I've always been daddy for DK.
Well, welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. As y'all know, James is the host of the exclusive content and I have him kind of take lead on that. And I kind of co-host for the exclusive content. Before we start, we got to do a little Patreon shout out to all of our current subscribers. Luis Hernandez, Justice Jimenez, Rashi LeBlackedge, Tyler Ming, Feli Landveld, Daniel Picora, Caleb, Christian Ellis, Jared Barnum, Floxivin, Yannick Tchaitsichian, oh my gosh, Dominic Flugel, Elias Lamb, ADO, Torelm, Jason Parsley, Mighty Made Fellows, thanks for being subscribers of the exclusive content.
Yeah,
anyway, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive or /Patreon if you want to check out all the exclusive content. Anyway, we have a really interesting topic. We talked about it briefly. This is something that triggers me quite often. So we need to talk more about this and be more open about this because this is, I think, we need to break down what's happening, why it's happening, and how to avoid it or at least be aware of it is... there's a lot of superstition. I'm thinking out loud here. There's some superstition in the industry, mysticism, and it's overcompensating for people's ego or lack of confidence and stuff, possibly insecurity. And I think most of these people don't realize that that's like the function of the things that they're saying. They think that they're saying it in good faith, but I don't think it's actually helping anybody, and I think it's completely self-serving.
Yeah.
And we need to talk about that. We need to address this issue, and also... there's also going to be times when it's not really an issue, but just something to be aware of.
Yeah.
For example, I don't know this story, so I am totally making this up. This is completely speculative, right?
Yeah.
Ariana Grande, Greg Wells mixed Ariana Grande for the Wicked soundtrack.
Yeah.
Greg Wells has mixed many film, TV, and pop songs. He's a great mixer.
Yeah.
He's famous for it.
Yeah, he's excellent.
He's excellent. He's been, has gotten many awards for it. Ariana Grande at the end of the day had to ask Serban, and Serban was the co-mixer on Wicked.
Yeah.
I am not convinced that Serban's role isn't a mixer. Like at that point,
yeah.
Serban's role is probably, and I'm speculating here and I'm being open about that. Serban's role is probably not to be a mixer. He was probably just a superstitious anecdote for Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
Because Ariana Grande, after a certain point, like the level of ears and training that it takes to understand what makes a good mix, like at a certain point, the artist just has to trust the mixer, trust the process.
Yeah.
Right? Ariana like hasn't been trained or hasn't been practiced to say with 100% confidence this is the mix. She just knows that when the label works with her and when she goes through her normal process, Serban mixes her stuff. Yeah. And whenever he mixes it, they go viral. They do well. They do very well. That's all she knows. So she hasn't been trained to critically listen, but she has been trained that this is just the way that we do things.
Yeah.
So what is Serban in that workflow other than a form of superstition and mysticism? I've always used Serban. Serban's always been great to me. We have to use Serban. I am not comfortable releasing this without Serban touching this.
Yeah.
Serban's role is not a mixer. At that point, he is a mixer, but he serves the role of superstition.
Yeah, he's there to comfort Ariana in this example, I would for sure say. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like other ones that come up, the most common one is people being superstitious about like a sound a DAW has, thinking that like Pro Tools will sound different if you export out of there than if you export out of Logic or things like that. That's like a super common one. One that is kind of a superstition, but like has more depth to it is the whole analog versus digital debate. Where it could be a superstition that you have to have analog to make things sound better. When at the end of the day, we know there's so many huge, amazing mixers that are now going fully into the box. And so I think it's all across the industry. And I think there is a healthy approach because the thing about most of these superstitions, I feel, is most of them have some root grounding in something that you need to be aware of, but they don't. Many times it's packaged by like very respected mixers or engineers in a sense that you have to do it this way, or it almost encourages you to not rely as much on your ears and to just follow a certain technique, which is where I think the danger could come in.
Yeah. This is the thing too, is we need to preface with before all of this, before we get heated and I start overgeneralizing and getting triggered and stuff, is while I am relatively sane, I want to preface that not everybody, everything does and everybody does takes this role of superstition or mysticism. And no, not everybody doing any of this stuff is always compensating for some sort of validation or the illusion of control. It's not always the case. Yeah. Most people, I would say, that are highly advanced and doing very well in the industry have a general understanding of this.
Yeah.
And this is a big why, the big reason why advanced mixers and mastering engineers always say, use your ears. Because at the end of the day, that's just what it comes down to. It's not this specific Pultec is giving them a sound. And you'll notice like some of the top tier engineers, they say, this is the specific Pultec that I use for every mix. And then if they're ever poked as to why, they'll be like, I've just always had it and I've had people work on it. I like the way it sounds.
Yeah, it's
pragmatic.
I came up with this and like this is what I use the most and I'm most comfortable with it.
Really different from this Pultec. You have to have this Pultec or you cannot have my sound. This is the ultimate thing.
Yeah.
And you can't get this unless I have it. It's a Zen saying of like a Zen monk that tells you that that you cannot be enlightened is not enlightened. But a Zen monk that says you too can be enlightened is probably closer to being enlightened.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, it's kind of like that. Like anybody that claims any sort of singular authority to the truth is probably misguided.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think any of the people who give these misguided or just generalized advice, I don't think any of them do it with malintention.
Yeah.
There's no intent to do something wrong with it.
I'm not going to expand this thought because I think about bad faith versus good faith a lot when it comes to a lot of things in this world. And I'm going to have to agree with you completely here. Most people who do not do this in bad faith.
Yeah, in the engineering world.
I honestly think most people are just not aware, haven't really thought about it, or they're making up for some sort of insecurity or ego thing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they need to feel like they're in control. Like even with ultra running, ultra runners are like, some of them are highly competitive. And there was this one lady who I was talking to. she like had to pick fights with people. She like, that person right there, she's a bitch to me. And I'm like, did she say anything to you? No. And so she was like trying to tell me, like, she's totally making this up in her head. She needs to feel like she's getting bullied in order to push herself to. So she's like,
that's
making
wild.
Up. She's making up beef in her head. There's like a cow and she's like named the cow in the corner of the track.
Yeah.
And every time she went around that corner, she's like, Billy is fucking with me. He wants to see me lose. And yeah. So she would like, she, that was her mechanism, but she was aware of it, right? Her
yeah.
mechanism to push herself was to feel like people are underestimating her, and then that pushed herself. And she like did 150 miles.
Yeah.
You know, in like 72 hours or whatever it was. And she's the boss.
Yeah.
She's goated. But like there's also some self-awareness. I think there's a lot of people who kind of do something similar to that, but are very not self-aware. Mm. And the reason why I have an issue with this is because they're promoting that illusion of certainty. They're promoting this mysticism as a form of surety. And I think it's poisoning the education that people are receiving. I honestly think it's misguiding yeah. people and teaching them the wrong thing. Like
yeah.
it's a bad, sandy foundation if you don't understand where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And I think the people in the, again, higher levels kind of understand and see it within each other. And we at times make mistakes of using words. English, by the way, is just, for example, like English is just not the vehicle to talk about ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like every word has a deeply strongly tied context. For example, childish and childlike, one is a derogatory term, one is a positive term. Childish
yeah.
is bad, childlike is good. But in Japanese, that would be a neutral term. And it depends on the context. Like you can say shit to the Pope and in Japanese and he wouldn't bat an eye until you said it in a bad way.
Yeah.
Right. There's no context to that until you give it context. And so what happens is this is like a natural cultural phenomenon, especially with English, that people tend to accidentally speak with certainty when that's not what they really intend. So it might also just be people have like communication problems and they don't realize that they're not doing a good enough job at properly addressing the ambiguity that is actually typically the driving force of this concept. One
yeah.
of the only people that does really good and people don't like him for it or love him for it is Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Rick Rubin is very good at speaking ambiguously, like addressing the root problems and not the technical things.
Yeah, like too good to the point where I only got halfway through his book. I got bored of it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And here's the thing is like, if you talk to many advanced like mixers, the reason why Mix with the Masters is kind of boring to some people is because at the end of the day, you realize, oh, these people don't have secrets.
Yeah.
You want them to have secrets because that's the way your mind protects itself from realizing how mediocre it is. You want people, it's easier to believe that people have secrets that they're gatekeeping than to realize that you just suck.
Yeah.
So if even like in a natural social consequence, this is a big specifically Gen Z millennial issue. And this is not a political thing, but this is just a way that we compensate. When people find out for the first time that they're socially incompetent and have to face that part of their ego, what they do is millennials and Gen Zers like to self-diagnose with autism. Instead of being like, I need to improve at social scenarios, they're like, I think I'm just autistic. Because it's easier to admit that you have a problem like that and this is just something that you can't change than to admit that you need to work on this.
Yeah.
And that's not diminishing anybody with actual autism. I'm hoping that diminishes people that self-diagnose. I think that's kind of immoral, actually, and it lessens the actually autistic people and their needs and their protection that they need.
Yeah.
Don't do that. But I think, like, honestly, this is the social concept that we're speaking of.
Yeah.
And to be fair, this is like a higher level of awareness that most people may be like finally understanding or hearing someone articulate this out loud. And it is fairly ambiguous, so I'm going to do my best. I'm not a psychologist, and I'm not a doctor. I'm just like a human that is trying to be self-aware, reads a lot of books. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And James is also, a Ravenclaw, very curious, and is also self-aware. So I think we can both speak on this pretty properly within the context of mixing.
Shout out Ravenclaws.
Shout out Ravenclaws. Yeah.
Just outed my house like
that.
Man.
Well, I mean, I think the point is like, education for the sake of curiosity in itself, not for self-serving, not to be better, not to prove yourself. It's, we talked about this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hermione's a Gryffindor because she wants to be seen as smart.
She needs the accolades.
She needs the accolades.
Yeah. Who, I guess before we get into like the bad advice given, is there anyone that comes to mind that you think, like when you see them speak online or stuff, generally gives like the opposite of what we're talking about and like it's really good online advice of like the big mixers?
Does anybody give like really absolute overgeneralized advice that actually is good?
Or they're just not as guilty of like what we're about to talk about?
That is not as... No, I think there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Again, I think Leslie is like one of the best examples.
He's
Leslie
like a perfect
Brathwaite.
Example. Yeah.
Leslie Brathwaite is the perfect example of not overthinking it.
Yeah.
He is mixing wise completely with the Tao.
Yeah.
He just loves music. He's a freaking nerd and he knows it. He's not embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
He understands that his value and self-worth is not tied to secret techniques. And he has no internal drive to create techniques, secret techniques or secret formulas in order to make his mixes sound good. In fact, when he shares how simple his techniques are during Mix with the Masters or other online forums and stuff, I think some people who don't have that ego under control is almost embarrassed, would possibly react as embarrassed. Like Tizio had an issue with this. Like he didn't want to teach mixing the masterclass in the mix because he felt like he wasn't good enough at mixing.
Yeah.
Where like Leslie will do completely rudimentary, basic level mixing techniques and he felt no insecurity, he felt no shame about not having advanced techniques.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't a point to prove. It's just, this is how I do it.
Yeah.
And I really don't think mixing is that difficult. You just have to use your ears. And like, because I think in the opposite end is someone that is kind of self-aware is like, there's no secret behind this, but I'm ashamed of that.
Yeah. Like, it was interesting you brought up Tizio. He did, he did a live mix. Just for the record, they do these, like they bring in like a big mixer and they'll have a mix live and stuff like that. And like halfway through, could he use the FabFilter compressor for a lot of tracks. Like that was his main compressor. And he even like joked halfway through. He was like, man, I've like been so tempted this whole time to just use different compressors because I don't want it to look like so simple that he's just using the same compressor on most tracks.
And to be fair, again, this is where I'm going to stand in is like and say, and be fair and think of the other side here, is that I think that that's a very human reaction.
Yeah.
Right? To be insecure or to like not realize how good you are or to like always want to be better is a good thing.
Yeah.
Is zero insecurity the ideal amount of insecurity? Is zero anxiety the ideal amount of anxiety? The answer is obviously no.
Yeah.
Right? It drives you to be better.
Yeah.
So eventually he's going to get to the point and he probably has already gotten there where it's like he doesn't have to... He's got whatever he needs and he feels fulfilled and now he doesn't have to pretend, like he doesn't have to even have to feel guilty. But the point is, Leslie's already there. He's at the end of his career. He's about to retire, you know? And he's an absolutely, like he is the founding, one of the founding people of like, oh, this guy's got it together.
Yeah. Shout out to Leslie.
He's incredibly good.
Yeah.
And he's not at all, there's no unhealthy tie. Insecurity or like tie to superstition that he's relying on to make himself feel good. There's no overcompensating. There's no compensation mechanism that he's relying on. I mean, again, what the point of this episode is not to shame people that are using these mechanisms, self-developed mechanisms, but it's more about one, protecting yourselves and recognizing when this is like an absolute truth versus this is just a mechanism that people are using to overcompensate. And then also partially to shame people that are using certainty as a mechanism and don't realize it and teaching with that mechanism.
Yeah.
This is the way that you use this plugin. If you do not use this plugin, it is incorrect. You have to have this piece of gear. An analog Rev A 1176 is the best. And if your vocals don't go through it, it won't sound expensive.
Yeah.
Like those sort of certain, that's just bad faith.
Yeah.
And people don't realize it. Well, hold on. Let me explain this. Bad faith means that people are intentionally giving bad information.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's when people are sometimes often incorrect, they're still working in good faith. Like they really believe that that's the thing. It's obviously wrong, but if they really, really believe it, I still consider it in good faith.
Yeah.
They're just wrong.
Bad faith means that they don't really believe.
Yeah. They're purposefully trying to mislead people with information that they know is misleading.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think most people are acting in bad faith. But let's talk about this. The reason why I think superstition, why baseball is like a really good comparison mm-hmm. to mixing in this situation, is baseball is filled with superstitions. Spitting before each play, never changing out your glove or using somebody else's glove, not stepping on the foul line, same meal before every game, don't talk about a no-hitter, you know, lucky socks, lucky gloves, lucky wristband.
There's like the peeing on your hands.
Yeah. Like even some people, yeah, peeing on your hands. Like there's like a player that did that you like, I forgot what it was. Like he dumped his hands in his own urine or something like that. There was one specific player that's not like a, but the point is baseball is also one of those things. It's a very high skilled sport. But it comes down, like, especially, it's so funny. I love, the funny thing about baseball is that it's kind of like a game of, it's obviously a game of statistics and probability.
Yeah.
Even the best players, like in basketball, if the best players hit a free throw, they're going to hit a free throw. They just need to get the free throw, right?
Yeah.
In baseball, they go up to a plate, the best player in the world, Shohei Ohtani still has like a 28%. Batting average.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Is he going to be able to hit it this time? Is still a whole, like, it's a probability game.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with mixing. Like, you could be the best mixer in the world and the client might not like it. We've talked about this on other episodes, right? Does that make Shohei Ohtani a bad hitter if he strikes out? What if he strikes out 5 times in a row? Does that make him a bad baseball player? No. It's just a streak. It was just it's probability. Yeah. If you get denied by your clients 3 times in a row, does that make you a bad mixer? No. Well, it might also be.
Yeah.
It might also be, but it's the average for Shohei. It's the average of the season. Because the next hit after a 5 streak getting struck out and whiffing the ball, he'll hit a home run. And same thing with us. Like, you can't really say in the microscopic context, are we good mixers or not? It's a long-term career. You have to look at your career, right? Okay, anyway. So because of that, the human tendency to overcompensate for uncertainty, for compensating with ambiguity, is to start involving mysticism and superstition.
Mm-hmm.
Almost in every single culture, there has been shamans or something that takes the roles of shaman. Whether there's drugs involved or not, someone speaks to some supernatural entity, whether that's ancestors, ghosts, or God or gods, and is the medium and portrays that. Like, they're like, I don't know what to do with my life. What should I do? Let me speak with the spirits. La, 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 la.
Exactly.
Here's what it is. Fucking out, like, that has no scientific basis to be correct.
Yeah.
But humans feel more secure hearing advice from someone who claims to be in tune with the supernatural because there's less certainty. Now there's less ambiguity for them.
Yeah.
Humans dealing with ambiguity is a normal thing. It is very difficult for all humans across all cultures, across all time.
It's like all of philosophy.
Yeah. Well, all of Eastern philosophy.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is that is the true nature of the universe. And that is more true with mixing than in anything else. Nature is ambiguous. We don't know why things happen. We don't need, and you need to learn how to not need to know. There is also there's a lot of paradoxes, like the paradox of you are good enough and also you could still improve. That's a paradox, right? And some people have a hard time wrapping their brain around it. The point is, like, even the concept of wrapping your brain around it is silly because that's not something to wrap your brain around. It's just two realities that you have to accept. Like, you have to accept that you're probably good enough and also you have a lot to improve. If you overthink it, that's when you start getting cognitive dissonance and possibly even nihilism, as we won't get into. Don't worry about it. If you overthink it, you will be removed from what is natural to us, what is already natural to us.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's talk about some of these talking points. Okay, first off, let's talk about the myth of the secret sauce. James, you've heard of people talking about the secret sauce. Just rant on this. Talk about this. Like, how do you feel about this?
What's up with all these bitches and their secret sauce? Am I right, fellas?
Yeah. Well, I mean, our good friend Ivan has a whole...
Yeah, Ivan, although I feel like his approach is more healthy-ish. Like the people he interviews, but yeah, there's like this idea that secret sauce, and this happens across, I think, any career field you go into. We want the secret sauce. We want almost a silver bullet that will tell us this is what will make your mixes overall better. And so we want to be told like, oh, using these specific monitors, that's my secret sauce. Or using this plugin or only using these plugins. Like what's the big one? Only using UA plugins. That's the secret sauce because it has that analog sound. Or just the fact of using analog is what will make things sound better. And that's the secret sauce. Like I know... I'm comfortable saying his name because he already has a certain type of reputation out in the audio industry. But CLA, he is a big example. If you look up most of his interviews when asked about like what he did, he always mentions that how he got his sound or almost his secret sauce is his analog console. That's what gave him it. When at the end of the day, people could accomplish just as good and maybe even better mixes all in the box as well. And so there's this, and it's a hard thing to do because I understand that, especially in the age of having reels or having very short form content, you want something that's very catchy and very quick. And it is, for your average viewer, very boring to hear someone say, you just got to practice, you got to get feedback, you got to put in the time to develop your ears and understand plugins and work with other people to get to where you understand audio to a point where you could get consistently great mixes. That is a very boring answer. That is an answer that, especially if you're just at the beginning of a career, I don't think you don't really want to hear, because that just means that you won't get results as quick as possible. And so I think this whole myth of a secret sauce has gone a little out of hand. And I think it's become something that people rely on, or it makes people who don't have, like if someone says, my secret sauce is insert this gear or this plugin, you feel like you can't accomplish it. That's definitely moments I had in the beginning. It's when I would see those videos, I'd be like, oh man, I don't have this plugin. It's like $200. I can't afford it. That's what's going to be holding me back right now. And so it can create a little bit of this unnecessary self-doubt, wherein you should be in a place where you feel like you could get greater results with any plugins, with any DAW and things like that. So yeah, I feel like secret sauce, and to a degree, I sympathize somewhat with bigger creators, because I think that after you get interviewed in so many podcasts, it could be tempting to get bored of just saying, you know, the correct answers of working hard over time and studying, mixing, and just training your ears. You could probably get bored of giving those answers, and it could be very tempting to say, oh, I do this, or I use different meters, and that gives me a better sound, or things like that.
Yeah.
Those are kind of my thoughts.
So that's great. I think when it comes to the regular podcast, people have heard me say I will mix better with stock plugins.
Yeah.
And I think most of our listeners, I'm not going to lie, are top 1% geniuses, very smart. Everybody listening to this podcast is already intelligent, right?
Yeah, you got to be smart to listen
to this. Yeah, very smart to listen to this podcast and this episode. But so people have already picked up on this, so I know I'm repeating myself, something that's very obvious.
Yeah.
But the social function of me saying that isn't to prove, it might be a little bit to prove dominance and authority.
Yeah.
But the main social function of me saying that out loud and in that way is to show people straight up that there is no secret sauce, that there is no, I'm saying that I will outmix you with stock plugins because I don't need a secret sauce. I don't need a specific plugin. Nobody needs a specific plugin. And it's to help people realize and come to awareness that, oh, that's right, DK would outmix me with stock plugins, meaning it's not about the tools.
Yeah.
Right? It's not about the tools. And that's the point. There's a lot of nuance with this and mysticism. Like, so when Ivan says, what's your secret sauce in that context? This goes into a little bit of like semantics. He's probably talking about like, what are the tools that you use the most? Like, what do you like to use? But if someone says, this is my secret sauce, I need to use this, or this is the absolute correct way to do it, they are false prophets.
Yeah.
Do not listen to that. There's probably some truth to what they're saying, and you could try it out, but do not ever be pulled into any feelings of insecurity if you do not have that specific tool or tool set or that specific technique or whatever.
Yeah, I think a healthy approach to those videos, because I still watch them, I think they're cool, is for me, they serve a purpose of turning me towards or onto something that I wasn't aware of before. Like, oh, what's your secret sauce? Oh, I do this multi-band clipper and I clip the mids a lot and it gets this sound. I was like, I never thought of that. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
That isn't a healthy approach.
Yeah. Stay curious. The point of all of this is to stay curious. I think like one that's going to smack people right across the face with self-actualization here is like the big concept is DAWs. Next time you talk about DAWs and someone says, I use another DAW, do you feel the cling of, ooh, do I need to be using that? Or do you feel absolutely nothing because there is no insecurity or attachment to a DAW?
Yeah.
For people, like people oftentimes ask me, what DAW do you use? Pro Tools. Oh, that's because you're a professional. That's the industry standard. No, you're already thinking about it more than I've ever thought about it. Right?
Yeah.
Like, no, I just use it. I'm used to it. I'm quick with it.
Yeah.
It's not superior. It's not better. I don't do it because it's the industry standard. That's just what I use.
Yeah.
Like the fact that people need to give it reason, I think speaks on some sort of insecurity. This is again, if you yourself feel the clang, the pangs of guilt or insecurity when you hear somebody else using another DAW, or you feel like you need to be using a different DAW, or you're insecure about the DAW that you're using, unless you're using Audacity. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. That's a joke.
Unless you're a little bitch boy using Audacity.
That's a joke, right? But I mean, right? Like, that's a really good example of how we talk about this. It's not real. And then all of a sudden we talk about DAWs and it's like, oh yeah, I'm definitely doing that.
Yeah. No, I've been guilty of that for sure.
We've all have.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's like, to get out of this isn't some like you're born with the thing. Everybody who has gotten out of this mindset has worked on getting out of this mindset. Like maybe Leslie's like slightly autistic or whatever and has always been a nerd and had been an outsider and he's just been totally cool with that and like that's part of his nature. Sure, partially, probably. But there's also a part of him that I almost guarantee he's worked on it. Like he's been self-aware.
Yeah.
And he's worked on trying to be, like actually I know this for a fact. Because on a live stream when I talked to him in an interview, he had a whiteboard reminding him with affirmations like, I am worth this much. He had different affirmations. I don't need to do this. I do need to do this. He had different affirmations.
Oh, cool.
To help him remember different things.
Yeah.
Like that means he's worked on it. That's awesome. Currently working on it. Yeah. He is a human. So I think that's another good thing to realize is coming to this conclusion and understanding in this mindset isn't something people are naturally born with. Everybody who gets there has been working on it. You are not weird for being very susceptible to marketing and to general psychology, to general peer pressure. You're not weird for doing this. You are absolutely the same as everybody else. You need to work on it. It is not you don't need to self-diagnose with some sort of mental neurodivergency. You need to work on it. And if you have a neurodivergent thing as well, that doesn't excuse you from working on it. You still need to working on it. It doesn't excuse you to be an asshole, right? You still need to work on it.
Yeah.
You just realize it's a little bit harder. That's all. But that doesn't stop you from working on it, right? It's the same thing. Okay, going into the second talking point here. Mysticism in advice from elite mixers. Again, this is a problem with language, and I think it's also the fact that like I've practiced articulating mixing for over 500 episodes, 300 plus for the general podcast, 200 plus, 250, actually 700, 350 plus for the regular podcast, 250 plus for the exclusive podcast. I've had a lot of practice addressing ambiguous topics with a co-host for pushback. Right? And so we have, I am going to say that I am not more self-aware or more intelligent. I've had more practice articulating. Any elite mixer, Andrew Sheps, Leslie Brathwaite, even Tizio, even Baines, like, they may be really good and they have a certain level of understanding, but you have to realize that it also takes a unique amount of skill and practice to be able to properly articulate an idea the way that you actually understand it.
Yeah.
Like, language is a barrier in itself, right? Even if you are, this is your first language and you are ambiguous, and you are, this is your first language and this is the only language you know, and you're very familiar with this language. Articulating is a whole nother skill set and barrier. So you have to realize that anybody teaching you things has to practice articulating it. So anybody that hasn't had 500, 700 episodes of podcasts under their belt have to all of a sudden address something ambiguous with the peer pressure of knowing the audience wants some form of certainty and closure.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to properly articulate the way that you actually believe in it.
Yeah.
Even if you tried to and are hyper aware of this, you probably can't your first time. Anyway. So the point of me saying is I don't think most people who fall into this trap are doing it in bad faith.
Yeah.
I think some people are rage baiters and they're doing it in bad faith. But I honestly think most people just, they're not even dumb. I think they're just not as focused or practiced at articulating the true nature of what they internally understand.
Yeah.
Because it is ambiguous.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when you do podcasting a lot, like you and I do, it like almost creates this habit when you talk in general of you're always aware of how what you're saying is going to be interpreted. Where most mixers, they go on a podcast like once or twice a year, or like maybe three times, and that's
or
most,
get on a forum or some sort of.
That's their most practice they've had explaining it. So I get that.
Like this takes like talking about anything ambiguous, like art.
Yeah,
takes an insane amount of self-awareness and practice.
Yeah. I say with, in terms of elite mixers, because we talked about him like a touch before with Jason Joshua. His is like an interesting thing because we were talking about it before about this subject.
I think he's one of the few that's bad faith.
Oh, you think it's bad faith?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Because I think that I think he's a marketing genius.
Yeah.
He is. He's a marketing genius. I don't like, even he says, for example, this is a great example of bad faith. He says out loud, fuck your rough mix. I'm here to make hits. I'm not here to make your rough mix sound better.
Yeah.
When I went to him in person, I said, you've said this. What do you mean? Do you ignore the rough mix? He says, no, I still respect the rough mix. So he knows that what he's saying is inflammatory and is going to cause arguments, is like really overly assertive and disagreeable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in reality, he still references the rough mix. That's an example of bad faith.
No, I get
that. He's doing it to provoke people.
Yeah. But I would say also, like, some of the tips he gives are, like, very helpful. But he does give
them
very
helpful.
His, I'd say, of the tips that, like, the top people give are, like, one of the more applicable ones and stuff.
But he never says out loud, this doesn't work, or
he's very certain.
He's very overly certain.
Yeah.
And I don't think in real life, I don't think he's as certain as he is. Because one thing that you need to realize with Jason Joshua and anybody at his level too, is if you have that many assistants and that much demand, you have to, practically speaking, you have to systematize things.
Yeah.
You can't do a custom one-for-one mix, every single mix, when you have a backload of like 2 months worth of work.
Yeah.
And you have to be doing 5 songs a day.
Yeah, it needs to be replicable.
Yeah, replicable.
Your assistants.
Yeah, it has to have some sort of system and format. And that's not a bad thing. Every top 0.1% has some sort of replicatable, duplicatable, some sort of system or format to work through.
What would you say, I'm just looking at some of our bullet points, would you say is a way to discern if you're an up-and-coming mixer? Because I think most, like you said, like when you get to a certain point, you're able to just tell what the actual core advice is.
That's true.
When you're beginning a mixer, what's like a way to discern between like what makes advice more tactical or more just mysticism?
That's a really good point. I think that when you're at the beginning or intermediate phases, you still don't have enough back like experience and maybe not talk to enough people with accolades.
Mm-hmm.
to know for sure when people are being just inflammatory, or when people are just speaking out their ass, or when people are just bad at articulating versus when people are talking in good faith or in bad faith, it's hard to be able to tell. And again, it is human nature to want to believe that the solution is a simple fix.
Yeah.
Right?
I think a code word to look out for is just like when people say like certain words, like always.
Yeah.
I always use this on my mix bus.
You have to use this. So like the only thing, so we know conceptually that nothing is certain because of experience, but if you don't have the experience to, and or have the confidence to be able to discern what people are saying and how they mean it, I think, yeah, some best practices are to be wary of always, for sure, for certain, all the time. You have to have this.
Yeah.
You must be doing this. Low pass filter all the time. High pass filter, everything. You like those sort of like words where there's absolute certainty in a thing, are things to at least start questioning it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's bad advice.
Yeah, I'd say take every bit of advice as try it. That's it.
Again, I think another functional approach. So people have been listening to the podcast a long time know that Lou and I are pretty, not anti, but we do not like the Sony CA100G, like a $10,000 to $15,000 mic, into this 1073, into the CL1B. Like that is the classic LA pop and rapper chain.
Yeah.
We are against that. We say, don't do that. But there's two things that I usually preface when I say that. Is one is I say, as a listener, you should, this is a conclusion that I've come to. It is my own conclusion. And I don't think you should, don't avoid that chain. Go and try that chain and come up with your own conclusion. And the second social function of me saying that is to show people that there is no absolute answer. That you have the ability, the permission to have a different opinion.
Yeah.
So it's more of like a permission factor. But if I were to say, hey, this sucks and it's absolutely bad, don't use this. And I say, don't even try it. Like, it's don't waste your money on it.
Yeah.
Now that's like a little bit too certain in its own fact. But we always try to emphasize and say, we don't like it, but you should try it yourself and find out for your own if it's why we don't like it.
Yeah.
Because you may like it.
Yeah. If you do, great.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that's like a really good example of how, and this is the problem again with language, especially with English, is that the classic rule with politics is that to each and every reaction, there is a much bigger overreaction.
Yeah.
And that's just how humans operate. So there have been times that I am guilty of in this podcast. I'm not perfect. There's been times that I've let it slip by where as a form of overreaction, I've accidentally said with certainty the opposite thing.
Yeah.
But that's
he
not
said some
right.
bad things. Let me tell you guys.
Yeah. All right. The next topic. The next topic, talking point as we come, we need to, sorry, we're going, this episode's going a little bit long, but the next talking point is a really good one. Certainty as a performance.
I think we have the same person come to mind.
Ooh.
CLA.
Oh, yeah. Like, there is a social, societal benefit to seeming certain.
Yeah, that's been his shtick, like, marketing-wise.
Dude, there's a whole couple chapters about it in the 48 Laws of Power.
Yeah.
Like, seeming certain, what happens is anybody with less self-awareness or anybody that is not that doesn't know much about a certain topic will then all of a sudden cling to your words and see to you as a person of authority.
Yeah.
For example, this is a great example that's like Lou isn't a super coffee nerd, but he was trying to be helpful. And I said, before I got into coffee, he's like, what's the difference between espresso beans and regular beans? And then Lou's like, okay, espresso is, you have to get espresso beans if you're trying to make espresso. Turns out that that's not true. That's a marketing term. But like, he didn't know that, but he wanted to be helpful for me. It was practical for him. He wanted to be helpful. He bullshitted stuff. He wasn't trying to lie. He wasn't acting in bad faith. He just saw that some beans were marked as for espresso, but he didn't realize that the truth of that was because that's a marketing term. There's no espresso roast. Espresso likes light roast, dark roast, medium roast. There's no region or origin that is specific for espresso. Yeah. Unless tasters decide that this specific blend tastes best in espresso, but it's not necessarily limited to espresso, right? Mm-hmm. For example, that's like a really good example of like certainty as a performance. And like sometimes it's in bad faith. CLA does it in bad faith. Jason Joshua does it in bad faith at the time. Politicians obviously do performative certainty all the time. Everyday people, I do this on occasion. Performative certainty. Just be aware of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so, because it is, it's unfortunate, it's so boring to watch or listen to people who are very uncertain.
It is, there is, yes, it is boring to watch. And we as humans don't think it's interesting. And we as humans, especially when we don't understand a concept, will cling to people who perform authority.
Yeah. Like, who's it? Lex Friedman. He's like notoriously fairly like uncertain or like very neutral and stuff.
Yeah.
So boring. Oh my goodness, so boring. But he is, that's his brand, is that he is that.
And here's the thing too, is like everybody has a right to an opinion, even if it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, and you should have opinion. There's an argument to be made that one of the purposes of this life is to have opinions.
Yeah.
I've made this opinion on a very long ago episode. If you find it, comment on the podcast, DM me which episode we talked about this. But like it's okay to have opinions.
Yeah.
But realize that some people's opinions, like you have to be self-aware. Are you overcompensating your lack of knowledge and clinging on to someone's performative authority and performative certainty? Or is this actually good advice? Are they acting in good faith? Are they acting in bad faith? Like, this is really, really, really difficult. Especially when you're floating in a sea of information and not knowing how good you are. You've just started mixing. You don't know what advice to take.
Yeah.
So there's also a part of me that says you should do everybody's advice. Even paradoxical double standard advice. You should be taking advice from everybody. And then you should determine your own opinions. Right? Don't idolize someone is a kind of thing. Okay, the cult of gear, how expensive gear becomes a way to project authority. Don't, obviously that's dumb.
Yeah.
How ego sneaks into audio advice. This is the only way it should be done. And I don't think that most people do this like on purpose, from like a Machiavellian nature, like for purposefully to gain authority and power. I think some people, like who's to say CLA is actually a Machiavellianist. Who's to say? Who's to say that he's a psychopath or a narcissist? He might just be a freaking idiot. Like, he might just be.
Yeah.
And he probably is, right? It's not my place to say.
Yeah.
And I can't determine that. But the point is, regardless of whether it's intentional or not, he says dumb stuff, just like I've said dumb stuff, just like we all will continue to say dumb stuff.
Yeah.
And we should work on that. That doesn't excuse us. We should continue to work on that. All right. Four. Go ahead.
Four is that the tools aren't the truth. I feel like this topic has been talked about so much already. It's almost because like there's a discussion of like certain plugins, but there's also a discussion of analog versus digital. And this is actually one now that I'm thinking about it. I feel like the general discussion that everyone, even like the big dogs, have been saying about this has already shifted. To where I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it was more heavily debated, but I think now it's far less debated.
Yeah.
Like, I think the arguments have like, everyone's
even 3-5 years ago compared to 10-15 years ago.
Oh, 10-15 years, heavily, heavily debated. But like now I feel like I feel like anyone who tries to be definite about it, the vast majority of people will be like, that's stupid. That's not.
Yeah, it. I think, that's a cultural understanding. We're starting to finally understand the majority of people that are audio engineers realize that there is no authority in gear.
Yeah.
I think the authority in the gear comes from, they must have made money from their career to be able to afford the gear.
Yeah.
So they must be successful. There's this assumption. That's not always the case. Some people have old money, right?
Yeah.
Or investments or whatever, or have poor spending habits and are actually broke as hell.
I feel like that's
really
a more common one.
Right? But it could be.
Yeah.
The point is, don't over-rely on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. For example, like, there's... Okay, pushback to this, though.
Yeah.
if I really love audio, even through the mist of ambiguity, if I really love what I do, I'm going to try to be better at it. And like, this is a big thing. In Japanese, the craftsman is called a shokunin, and the spirit of the shokunin is like, the diminishing returns does not matter. Do you know what diminishing returns is? Like, there's a certain point, or for the listeners of the podcast, for a certain point, you pay money for gear. There's a one-to-one ratio of you get better at it. The gear does help it make it easier. And then there's a drop-off point where it's like, all right, now you have to pay tens of thousands of dollars to have a 0.001% increase, if that. Yeah. That's arguable.
It's like with microphones. You see that the biggest. The difference from a $100 mic to a $1,000 mic is huge. But once you get past like the $3,000 mics, it's just not the...
It's diminishing returns.
It becomes such smaller differences. Still better, but like...
Possibly. Or it's like unique to that situation.
Yeah, but it's such a small difference versus that huge gap from the $100 to $1,000
mic. So that's diminishing returns. Like if someone really loves their craft, diminishing returns should have no part in the way that you look at things. You should do everything to the best of your ability. You should always be trying more. So in that case, I genuinely don't think that there's a huge difference between the converter and the interface that I have now and the one that I'm probably going to get by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I am always striving to be better at my craft.
Yeah.
I don't have an unhealthy relationship and say that I'm not going to be good until I get that new piece of gear, because that's objectively incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to improve my craft, so I'm going to save money and purchase this gear.
Yeah.
So the pushback to what we were saying with gear is that you should always, in the spirit of a shokunin, always be looking to level up your gear. Raise the standard always. Always raise the standard. Just don't rely on that, and don't create a need for that in order to feel like you're any good.
Yeah.
All right, that's kind of it for this episode.
Yeah.
There are some other things that we could talk about. This is a big reason why we always try to say like mixing is something to be, like mixing can only be learned. It cannot be taught.
Yeah.
It's because there is so much ambiguity. Like Rick Rubin is closer to the truth of it all than anyone who speaks with certainty. When Bob Horn talks about meters, it doesn't matter if the meters actually changes the sound of Pro Tools.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it really did, you would compensate and change your way of mixing with plugins before you get there to the end. Like it doesn't, at the end of the day, some of this stuff serves more of a mystical or superstitious purpose for the illusion of certainty or power and control, the illusion of control, which is a natural human thing. It doesn't make anybody less than. It doesn't make Bob Horn less than. It doesn't make Connor from the exclusive episode less than. It doesn't make it could make Jason Joshua less than if he's actually doing it in bad faith. It's who's to determine that. Right, but it doesn't make anybody less than. It's just something to be aware about for the purpose of you do not, like everything about this podcast is to make mixing accessible, to remove insecurity, and to just give you permission to blindly go at it. Go at it blindly or go at it, work hard at it. Even if you have some awareness, it doesn't matter. If you want to do this, you can do this. Don't be fooled by all the marketing and all the fake certainty, the illusion of certainty or the illusion of authority. Don't be bothered by it. You are a producer. You are not a consumer. We are producers. We are not consumers. Don't be fooled by the natural consumerism rampant in our industry, rampant within our need, within our ego, within our need for certainty. Okay.
Awesome. And then last plug for the exclusive episodes. Go check them out. I'd say just while we were talking about this, it's a good place if you're already an advanced mixer. I think it's very helpful too. It's also a good place if you're starting out because now in Patreon, we have like the episodes tagged with like limiter, compressor, stuff like that. And we talk a lot, very specific, the technical side of things. So if you're trying to understand how to use limiters, we have a lot of episodes with that. If you're trying to understand clippers more, we have more episodes of that. And so I think it's very helpful for that. But yeah, this channel is the philosophy. The exclusive episodes is more of the very technical, more nerdy side of audio.
Yeah. We break down techniques that other people use, and I will say, oh, this is why it's wrong, but also this is why it's good.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of give you context just like this from a philosophical standpoint, but it'll be about a specific technique with specific tools.
And we sometimes get a little more unhinged on that one.
We do get unhinged and very inflammatory.
Yeah, if you want to hear how racist DK really is.
Oh my gosh.
Because let me tell you, this is quite the front he puts on this.
Oh my gosh. All right, whatever. On that note, ching chong ping pong.
My words exactly. You stole it out of my mouth, man.
All right, dude. All right, dude. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast/exclusive.